Your first eight guys maybe should be blue plate specials, but those back five guys, they should be more like tin hats, more guys that are grunt players, garbage players that dive for the ball.
You are listening to the Scrambled Eggs Podcast on CrackSidewalks.com.
Welcome into a victory edition of Scrambled Eggs, your unofficial Marquette basketball podcast here on Crack Sidewalks. A very happy Joe McCann and Phil Bush here with you. Phil, I hope your wife is not within earshot because I'd hate for her to throw something at you during this podcast.
She took it really well until I kept bringing up the result of the game for like 24 hours, and now I may have to live in the basement for a while, but totally worth it.
Well, that's where your fridge of beers is, so, I mean, if there are worse places to be.
Yeah, that's correct. I could empty the fridge of many beers quite easily.
Well, hopefully Phil won't have to get too deep into the fridge of many beers in today's podcast, but in today's show, basically, I mean, the rundown is pretty simple. We're going to revel in the victory over Wisconsin, maybe touch on the victory over UTEP a little bit, maybe rub it in the Badgers' faces, because, yeah, none of their fans are listening to this anyway. And basically just evaluate where the team is. Since Marquette doesn't have a game this week, we're not going to preview into the upcoming games necessarily, at least not dive too deep into them. But maybe where do we think the team is and how far can this team go? Is it what we expected, not what we expected, better, worse, what have you? But Phil, I don't know about you, but man, that was a great game. I was a little stressed out watching it because I was kind of working during like the second half, but I was still paying attention to it. I know you were in the arena. What was it like to be at the Fiserv Forum during a victory like that for Marquette?
It was really cool. I mean, the arena really showed off the, I mean, you don't know exactly, or I can't prove it with science necessarily, but that was the loudest in-game experience I've been at, other than maybe the Villanova upset. It was just a packed crowd, and there was a fair amount of animosity between, I was actually pleasantly surprised. It was probably at worst 70-30 split between Marquette and Wisconsin fans, maybe closer to 80-20. So there were a few to heckle, but not too many that I was annoyed. So it was a great atmosphere, and especially in the second half, the crowd, I don't know if it came through on TV, but it's like the crowd reemerged as, hey, we can influence this game, and everyone kind of started to get into it. So it was a fun game.
Yeah, I mean, definitely looking at the pictures on social media, people posted a lot of photos. It definitely looked like there was significantly more blue and gold, just a spattering of red, really. I mean, the Wisconsin fans are going to be there, but I think 80-20 sounds better to me, but I wasn't there. I'm just kind of going off the pictures people were posting and some of the television shots I saw during the game. But, yeah, obviously it was a great crowd. I don't know if Fiserv Forum will have a crowd that great again this year. I hope it does. But based on the schedule, maybe not. But Marquette does have a few weekend home games in the Big East, so maybe there'll be some other loud crowds. But who knows if there'll be an atmosphere quite like that for a rivalry game. And Phil, I guess we just have to get used to this team winning with defense, because that's essentially what it did against Wisconsin. And really, the game was right along with what you and I predicted, and a lot of others. But as far as the score, I mean, it was tied at 61 at the end of overtime. Both you and I had the game in the low 60s in our predictions last week with a Marquette win. It just went to overtime, and it got into the 70s. But if that game, you know, maybe we didn't think it would go exactly that way, but for the most part we did get kind of what we expected from Marquette in they really had to grind it out. Ethan Happ got his points, but it was not an electrifying offensive performance as we kind of thought it wouldn't be when going up against a defense like Wisconsin's. But once again, Marquette's defense continues to do enough to help them win games.
Yeah, you know, I think this is where we call attention to some tweets that the main Crack Sidewalks handle tweeted out this morning, you know, and kind of talked about, and I think we should get to the offensive side of the ball a little later, but, you know, kind of talked about how Marquette had a pretty poor shooting night, especially Marcus Howard struggled offensively and actually had a worse effective field goal percentage than Wisconsin, which, you know, ordinarily would tell you, okay, Marquette must have lost. But Marquette turned Wisconsin over a lot. Wisconsin almost doubled the number of turnovers they had in the game, and Marquette got a lot of rebounds, which meant that Marquette did not turn the ball over much at all. It was, I think, the season low of turnovers for Marquette's offense. So what it meant is Marquette's defense was generating possessions for the offense, and that made the difference in the game. Is that, you know, Wisconsin, for the most part, pretty much was a one and done on the offensive end, and either Ethan Happ put it in the bucket, or Marquette got a rebound and went the other way. There wasn't much variation other than that.
Yeah, and yeah, you referenced the tweets by Crack Sidewalks earlier on Sunday, and you know, just kind of going through the four factors for those of you who may be not as familiar with KenPom and how it calculates efficiency. The four big factors that when you evaluate a team's effectiveness or KenPom rating, you know, effective field goal percentage, which is basically field goal percentage with some bonus points for threes, that's the most important one, and then turnover percentage, how much you turn it over or how much your opponent turns it over. Offensive rebounds, how many second chance points or how many second possessions you get by getting offensive rebounds, and then free throw rate is the last one, probably the least important, but it is one of the four factors. But yeah, that's, like, as you've said there, Phil, it is very rare that a team wins a game in which it has the lower effective field goal percentage. Because, I mean, you just do the math. You make more shots than they do. You make more threes than they do. You're probably going to win the game. But they were so outstanding in other aspects. This game was one of those rare cases because Marquette had such an edge in the rebounding battle, getting, like you said, Wisconsin was one and done so often. And they were really – did a great job of keeping Ethan Happ off the offensive glass. He only had two offensive rebounds all night, although, you know, he had 11 total. And then they were pretty good on their own offensive glass. And Wisconsin's turnovers early on, that's something that jumped out to me really in the first half, just the first 5 minutes of the game. Wisconsin must have had like five turnovers before the first television timeout, which was pleasant for us to see, but very uncharacteristic of them. And I think you have to give at least some credit to Marquette's defense and maybe the atmosphere. Maybe Wisconsin came out a little tight there.
Yeah, I think that's probably part of it, but I think some of it was just you know, Marquette's defense, and I want to say, you know, before we get into deep coaching, you know, I think this team showed a toughness, Marquette did, on the defensive end certainly, but around the game generally, that I don't think has been there in years past. And I think that really made a difference. I mean, you know, when you look at the game midway through the second half and Happ went down and got three buckets in a row without a stop, and basically they ran the same play and Wisconsin ended up four. I think previous years Marquette's defense might have folded, or the offense might have tried to do too much. But I just think that the toughness of the team is more present than I've seen under Wojo so far. And I think that really contributed to the defense, because, like, the Ed Morrow block, which, by the way, I tweeted out and gave credit to Theo John for that. So I owe Ed some laps for that mistake. But that block of Happ to keep the game tied at the end of regulation, I mean, that was just a pure heart toughness play, right, that I don't think that team had demonstrated prior to this year.
Yeah, and I think some of it must come from confidence, that they know maybe if the offense isn't there, that their defense is going to keep them in games now. You know, I think you're always going to have cold nights offensively here and there, but, you know, last year's team and the team before that knew if the shots weren't falling, they were probably going to get blown out, because they knew they probably weren't going to get enough stops on the other end. This team, if the shots aren't falling, I think they know that they can at least get a defensive lineup out there that is at least going to keep them in the game, so they're not going to get blown out more often than not. And, like, so maybe hopefully the offense does come around and you can claw back in it, as they did on Saturday. So I think there's certainly a confidence there, and I think maybe that's where some of that toughness comes from, is just going out there and really never considering that the team is out of a game just because you know you can get enough stops. And, you know, you have to give Ethan Happ a lot of credit. He got his. I mean, 34 points in that game. He was unstoppable there in the second half. I mean, really just kind of the middle 20 minutes of the game, it seemed like he was getting really anything he wanted. But really not a whole lot else from really anyone else on the team. So I think while maybe the defense got chewed up a little bit by Happ, I think they made up for it with basically the way they guarded everybody else.
Yeah, well, and I think you know, you saw a second half adjustment from Wojo in the first half. They were doubling Hap and leaving the shooters a little bit, and you know, you saw some other guys kind of making some contributions. Ford and Pritzel and Trice were kind of contributing there. Reuvers is what Reuvers, however the hell you pronounce that dude's name, the next great white hope at Wisconsin. But anyway, they were contributing, and then you saw a change in the second half where we said, all right, we're going to let Hap get his, but we're going to single up everywhere else. And, you know, if we can stop, you know, Hap once every three tries, then or deny him the ball altogether, then we'll take that and live with it. And I, the other thing from a defensive perspective is I really was impressed by the way they played at the perimeters and were able to help when somebody went and doubled or there was a screen and a switch. The weak side defenders were able to flash to the shooter and then get back to their guy, and everybody was recovering really well. So I just, from a defensive perspective, I think whether it shows up statistically, I was, from the eye test, that was the most visually appealing defensive effort I've seen out of a Marquette team in the Wojo era, just hands down. It was the best defensive performance I've seen out of this team.
Yeah, I think coming in, one of the concerns was how good a three-point shooting team Wisconsin was, and that's why maybe they were. You know, the Badgers were off to a better start this year than last year because they had shooters around Hap to give him a little more space. And Marquette, I mean, Wisconsin got a couple of threes off, but they still shot 5 of 24 from the game, which is
Yeah.
abysmal. I mean, 21% for the game. So, yeah, I thought they defended the perimeter pretty well. Brad Davidson took a goose egg in the game. So, I mean, you got to give the Marquette defense credit there. And really, they, you know, yeah, they had a few open looks. Reavers knocked a few down. Ford hit a couple of big shots, but really, Wisconsin was unable to kill Marquette from downtown. And so I think, yeah, while Hap really kind of went to work in the post against Helt and, you know, whoever else was guarding him at any given time, they threw a lot of bodies at him. But the fact that really no one else was able to make a significant impact in the game obviously worked to Marquette's advantage. And I think that was, yeah, maybe part of the game plan. Say, hey, look, if Hap gets 30-something points, okay, but if we hold the rest of the team to 30, about the same, 30-ish points, that maybe we can score enough points to get to 70 and win the game, and that's kind of how it worked out.
Yeah, exactly. It was basically Hap's going to get hit. Now, I will say a couple of times, the one thing I did get frustrated with is if you're going to foul Hap, and he only went 2 of 5 from the free throw line, which is what you expected, but three of those were and one situations.
Right.
If you're going to foul Hap, like, foul him so he doesn't get a bucket. Like, there was a couple of times where Joey Hauser could have just wrapped him up or just
yeah,
gotten
yeah,
to
maybe you're,
deny the
yeah,
shot.
you know, maybe, you know, Joey's afraid of the flagrant there, fouling too hard, but I know what you're saying. You know, if you're going to hack Hap, hack the crap out of
Right.
him.
Don't let the bucket go in. Like, because
but
you,
you know, I
you
guess
want
you don't
him
have to worry
at the
about it
line.
now, because hopefully Marquette never sees the only way Marquette sees that guy again is if it's in an NCAA tournament game. Other than that, they're done with him, which I'm glad to say Marquette will not see him again.
Yeah, I did tweet out yesterday that I was super glad Hap is graduating, because I don't want to see that guy ever again. And I will say this, that just a general state of affairs with Hap graduating, unless they've got some incoming recruiting class, I'm not impressed on who's left on that team
No,
for
I was
Wisconsin.
thinking about that earlier. Not that I want to dive into Wisconsin recruiting too much, but I mean, the Badgers just have one. Just looked at ESPN rankings. They have one unrated kid coming in next year. I guess you could say the same about Marquette, but at least Marquette's scheduled to bring back most of its top talent for next year. But I know Wisconsin fans are going to tell you they're probably going to get Jalen Johnson. I'm going to respectfully disagree on that, but he's a five-star guy in the 2020 class. You know, I mean, that would be a program saver for Greg Gard. But I mean, look at history. Guys rated that high in the state of Wisconsin tend to get out of the state. Not to get off on a big side rant, but you know, I see sometimes in people are breaking down the jobs between Marquette and Wisconsin. I've seen more than one person say, "Well, a lot of top kids in Wisconsin will probably go to Wisconsin." That's really not the case if you look at the history.
Yeah,
I'm not saying they all go to Marquette, But I'm saying most of them do not go to Wisconsin. Like the five-star guys, the highest-rated guys over the last 10, 15 years, maybe Sam Decker's the only five-star guy in the state of Wisconsin that went to Wisconsin. And that's probably – that might be about it if you go back about 10 years. They've gotten some nice four-stars here and there, but like the top-tier guys, top-tier five-star guys, most of those guys leave the state. Like Diamond Stone, I'm trying to think, Kevon Looney, who's in the NBA right now. He went to Kentucky. You know, obviously Henry Ellenson, he ended up at Marquette. But yeah, I can't say I would put a whole lot of faith that Greg Gard is going to rebuild this program through recruiting. We'll see if that changes or maybe he gets lucky here or there. But yeah, if you were a Badger fan, I wouldn't hold your breath for Jalen Johnson, my man. I'm not sure that's going to happen. I mean, that's an elite dude who's got an offer from Duke. So dudes like that tend to leave the state. But yeah, but I'm with you. If you're looking at the, you know, the programs right now, and I'd be more comfortable with where Marquette is at the moment than where Wisconsin is. You know, that, of course, could always come back the other way as years go by, but right now, I would say Marquette is in better shape for at least the next few years. At least they got. I wish they'd have a few more Housers coming in. I should have on the roster.
Yeah, but are we sure there aren't any other Housers out there to get?
Well, we should double check just to be sure.
Yeah, we should really kick the tires on that.
Peyton Touch has kind of like hit on that before, and I think others have as well. Is what a turning point in the rivalry the Housers getting to Marquette may end up being. Well, not so much that, it's the fact that Bo Ryan did not really aggressively recruit Sam Houser.
And right.
He kind of slept on Houser a little bit, and he ended up at Marquette. Like, could you imagine what this rivalry would be like if the Housers were both wearing red right now?
Oh, I would be despondent. Well, I mean, one, I wouldn't know how good we would have had it with the Housers, but like Wisconsin, like that you flip those guys over to Wisconsin, and we're talking about the trajectories of the two programs being in opposite directions. I mean,
right.
Look at the game yesterday alone. I mean, Joey Houser changed the game offensively, certainly, and was serviceable defending Ethan Happ at times, which, you know, I would certainly say they're two different classes of forward in terms of, you know, size and skill level. But, you know, and Sam was kind of the bedrock. He, you know, he didn't have, like, anything from the offensive end that really stood out at you, but, you know, he picked up 14 boards, defended well on the perimeter, 4 assists. I mean, those two guys were probably, you know, underrated, kind of MVP type players for Wisconsin, for the game against Wisconsin.
Yeah, they both were. Especially Joey. Joey hit some big shots. I mean, he had a couple corner threes that were huge, and he had that nice up and under. I think was that in overtime when he or maybe
yeah that was right yeah that was shot. The that was the no that was the first possession of overtime where he just kind of right, hesitated, yeah. Went baseline and just nonchalantly, you know, popped it up.
Just a kind of like one of those sneaky athletic moves. It's like, right. Man, that was damn good. like something like maybe you would see Hap do on the other end, but yeah, like. I think it's a big swing, a big swing in the rivalry. Not saying it's never going to go back the other way, because you know, as time goes by, things will go the other way. Hope it never does, but I think that has certainly swung it to Marquette's advantage for this short period of time. And hopefully, you know, Housers are around for at least one more year, and maybe Joey for a couple more after that. But I think that obviously that is one of the huge gets for Steve Wojciechowski in recruiting in his 5-year stint here so far. You know, one thing I do want to touch on, we'd be remiss if we didn't talk about it. How much of a punk is Brad Davison?
The biggest punk? Good God.
You know, like, I try not to, like, be like that when talking about college kids, you know, because they are still kids. They're, you know, amateurs and whatnot, but, and I'm sure maybe he's a nice kid off the court, but holy crap, that move when he punched Joey Houser in the nuts. Granted, it was a big point of the game because Marquette got 2 free throws in the ball. And Davison, it's just a cheap move, man. And just you know, the people all over Grayson Allen when he used to do crap like that. But, you know, when you do when you're Brad Davison and you do things like that, it's, you know, like, don't have half the talent that Grayson Allen did. And it's just irritating and annoying. And I don't know, how can you get behind a guy like that, really, as a fan? It's like, dude, it's got to be embarrassing, really. You know, it's one thing if – you know, if he's drawing charges and helping you win games, and you know, he's just this little tough little try-hard kid. But I don't know, when you just do crap like that, it's just embarrassing. And then on top of that, you know, no points in the game. I mean, he had more nut shots than he did points.
I mean,
that's tough to do.
Well, yeah, and he 0 for 3 from the free throw line, including missing two front ends of 1-and-1s. I mean, I think it's safe to say that Brad Davidson cost Wisconsin the game. I mean, it was a huge turning point when he did that. You know, how Joey Hauser stepped up and hit the two free throws. Now Marquette didn't sink the bucket after that, and Wisconsin closed within two. But I mean, that was just such a turning point, and there's no way you can argue that's accidental or unintentional or whatever, right? Like, I mean, he had to wind up.
He knew exactly what he was
doing. And it's like, what was the point? What, like, even if he got away with that, right, and didn't get called, like, what was the point? What was he hoping to achieve there?
Exactly. Like, you think Joey Hauser goes up to him after the game, goes, "Hey, man, that was funny. That was cool. Good job."
Right. No, like,
nice
like,
game, man.
Yeah, that's like – stupid.
Like, I'd be tempted to clothesline that dude in the post-game handshake. Like,
Marquette was too busy celebrating to worry about what Davidson was thinking about it, thankfully. But yeah, it was so stupid.
Yeah, the if you missed it on Twitter on Sunday, the Testicular Cancer Society or something like that.
Yeah,
they spread awareness for they made a tweet about Brad Davidson and said, "We appreciate his enthusiasm, but we prefer self-checks be done at home and not on the basketball court." It's pretty funny.
it'll get some mileage. But like to your point earlier, like if you're Brad Davidson's teammates, like, or I guess even the fans, like, how are you not looking at that dude and being like, "You cost us a big maybe Wisconsin."
Yeah, I don't know if you could put like the whole game on him necessarily, but I mean, even no matter how much you love the guy, you can't help but look at that game and say that was a terrible game. And
right.
Some bad moments for Brad Davidson. You know, besides the fact that he had an embarrassing nutshot moment, the fact that he contributed 0 points and missed 3 free throws, was it, as a 90% free throw shooter? So, yeah, like, it may not be fair to put the whole game on him because he wasn't the only guy who maybe underperformed, because the team shot, like I said, as a team, they were 5 of 24 from 3. They missed 11 free throws as a team. But, yeah, there's no doubt about that Davidson had a terrible game. And, yeah, I know some people refer to him as Buzzcut Brad. I'm going to start calling him Ballcheck Brad. I think it's a little more appropriate for him now.
That is the Scrambled Eggs podcast certified nickname for Brad Davidson.
Yeah, I guess and the thing is, we can keep bringing that back for a couple years. What is he, a sophomore now?
Yeah, he's a sophomore, yeah.
Okay, so good. We can use that for a couple more seasons because now, like, don't have to worry about him going pro or anything.
Yeah. Well, the other thing I would comment on, it was kind of, at least it felt this way in the arena. I don't, you know, I don't know in your stressful environment of splitting your attention 7 ways if you felt the same way. But I felt like this is one of the first games I can remember in at least a couple of years where, and I would not say the officiating was heavily in our favor, but I felt like we got a little bit of home cooking for once out of an officiating crew.
Yeah, like I mentioned, I was very distracted during the game. I could tell a short story about my whole day watching the game in a minute, but I guess all I will take away from it is that I was pleased with the officiating. You know, I don't think, you know, I don't think Davidson got any charges, so that was great. Maybe one.
I think he got one.
Yeah,
but he got called. He got called for a block on a flop that clearly he was looking to get shot by a sniper.
Yeah, I'd have to think about it, but I don't recall like any calls that went for Marquette where I really thought, man, Marquette got lucky there. Like that was a gift. I don't maybe there was some close 50-50 calls that could have gone either way, but I don't look back at that game and thinking it was significantly one-sided or there were 2 or 3 calls that that really shifted the course of the game that all went Marquette's way. You know, I thought for the most part the officials did a good job. I mean, they caught the Brad Davidson nut shot, which was an important call in the game, to be honest.
Right.
You know, and I think there were a few 50-50 balls near the end where they went to the monitor, and I thought they got those calls right.
Yep.
So overall, I really would have no gripes about the officiating from Saturday. I thought, basketball is a tough game to officiate, if we're being honest. And I thought that crew did a pretty good job.
No, I thought they did overall, right? I mean, I'm just thinking like little play. The one that sticks out into my mind as an example is Marcus. It was late in the second half. Marcus drove in, and Reavers ended up on him, and it looked like Reavers went kind of straight up, and Marcus initiated contact and missed the shot, but got the foul call for him. You know, and that was one of those that I think it just feels like in previous games, Marcus wasn't getting that call. You know, he'd get knocked to the ground and they'd let it go. So it was those little things. Again, I'm not saying that maybe it had gone so far the other way with some of the officiating that having a neutrally called game felt like home cooking, but
yeah, having a game called correctly just felt like a gift. I guess.
Yeah, yeah. especially after that Kansas State game. It was considerably a much more watchable game, the Wisconsin game, than the Kansas State game. So I will take that for sure. But speaking of Marcus Howard, we should probably talk about the offense. And I mean, Marcus Howard scored 27 points, but I guess you could say it was a fairly bad 27 points.
I mean, he took a lot of shots to get to those 27 points, right? But I wouldn't necessarily call it a bad outing necessarily. But yeah, he did have to take a lot of shots in the game. But I think the way this team is, Marcus has to take a lot of shots. I think, you know, there are other guys who can score, but more often than not, it is Marcus that really has to spark the offense, whether he is shooting the ball himself or trying to create for others. Because he, you know, while Chartouni is getting more minutes as the point guard, Marcus is still playing a lot and with the ball in his hands. So
I don't know that I totally agree that. I mean, Marcus has been generating a lot of the offense, but I mean, there was 3 or 4 minutes in that game where Marcus went to the bench at like the 8 minute mark, or maybe it was the 10 minute mark, whatever it was. And the offense, you know, wasn't lighting anything on fire, but it was adequate without him in there. So I'm not saying that, Marcus needs to have a decrease in minutes. I'm just saying if it's not flowing or he's really having to work at getting his buckets, that's where I wish there would kind of be a switch. Like they were doubling him when he'd get into the lane and stuff. I wish there was a switch there where he'd recognize that and become a distributor. And there's time for that to develop. But I think that's more my commentary is, you know, it was basically he was looking to score first. And they were definitely trying to take that away from him.
Yeah, but I guess more often than not, I do want Marcus to look to score because he is such an elite scorer. Because he's going to have those games like he had against, you know, Kansas State, where he's scoring 40 points, 40 plus points, and when he's setting program records. So you always want Marcus to have a scorer's mentality. I really I get what you're saying that you would like to see him create a little bit, but I do not want to see Marcus Howard as a passive guard.
Oh no, not at all.
Waiting for others, hoping others score. Now, looking for opportunities. If he sees wide open Hauser in the corner, yes, sure. Like maybe see that a little bit more, but. You know, overall, I guess I really don't have too much of an issue with Marcus's performance on Saturday because obviously they won the game. He had 27 points. He got to the free throw line a lot, got some guys in foul trouble, and yeah, he scored enough. Maybe he did miss a bunch of shots, but you know, shooters are going to shoot, and sometimes you're going to have nights where you throw up a few bricks. But he did what he had to do, and the offense got just enough. So. I get what you're saying. Maybe you'd like to see a little more because he is so talented, and we would all love to see him get closer to that 50% three-point percentage that we saw as a freshman, but that's kind of unsustainable when you're taking as many threes as he is now. But, yeah, I think we would all love to see Marcus, what is his three-point percentage as we head into the week, 34%?
Yep.
Which is okay, but maybe not good for him. I'm sure he would much rather see his percentage in the 40s. And yeah, maybe sometimes he does force it a little, and like he's trying to like get that percentage back up all in one game. But I always want Marcus to have a scorer's mentality, so I really don't have much of a gripe with the way he played.
Yeah, I get it. I, you know, it's two sides of the coin. I mean. I just thought at times it went a little hero ball. But hey, listen, I'm being overly critical because we got a big win and Marcus was a huge part of that. Though, I mean, I nearly fell over when Marcus missed two free throws in overtime to end the game. And he did. I did see in a post-game interview with him that he said he did a hell of a job on Dimitri Trice. And so he was chasing him all over the court on the defensive end as well. And he, you know, kind of in his commentary after the game said his legs were a little tired and he left the two free throws short. But, you know, outside of that uncharacteristic kind of bobble from Marcus, he did what he needed to do. So that's all you can really ask, right?
That's all. Again, Marquette beat Wisconsin. I have no gripes.
Why are we nitpicking?
I mentioned earlier my stressful day watching this game. You know, we're all stressed when we watch Marquette games. The Marquette Twitter account always jokes the blood pressure check thing, which is funny. But yeah, I definitely had a blood pressure check on Saturday. So this was kind of my Saturday. So I had to work, but I didn't have to work very long. Without getting, like, describing every aspect of what my job is, the long story short is, you know, we have our office where we produce this show, and then we have the local NBC affiliate where the show is broadcast out of, and we have to have, like, a person there to time out the show. Well, the guy who normally does that couldn't do it on Saturday, so I had to go in and help time out the show, which I didn't have to do much at the station. I only had to be there from about 5:30 to 7, roughly. So when I was asked, hey, man, can you work on Saturday? Can you go time out the show? I'm like, sure, no problem. What time am I going to be there? Oh, 5:30. I'm like, okay, that's fine. And then I thought, wait, what crap, what time is the Marquette game? I'm like, look at it, 4 o'clock. Shit. It's like, great. So I'm going to be distracted. So this is kind of how I worked it out. Our office is like 5 minutes from the station where I had to be. So I went to our office first at 4 o'clock, and I watched the first half at the office, thinking, okay, I'll watch the first half, then I'll leave at halftime, and I'll get to the station at 5, and they'll have the game on because that television's everywhere. And so I got to the station at 5. I'm watching the second half while doing the little things that I had to do to help prep the show, which was mostly done at that point because the guys at the station did most of the work already. But I still have to keep an eye on the game. And then there were guests coming in. So the guests on the show came in, and I had to kind of like escort them to this green room, and like, oh, I just kind of had to entertain them a little bit while they're waiting for the show to start. So I turned the television on, and like the Texas high school football playoffs are going on right now. So it's kind of a big deal. And like, hey, isn't that the Duncanville South Lake game going on right now? It's, oh yeah, let me see if I can get it on in here. And thankfully I'm flipping the channel in the green room, and that game is not available in the television green room we're in. So I'm like, oh, maybe we'll find something else. Oh, hey, how about this basketball game? We'll just watch this. So wow. I'm watching the basketball game in the green room, stressing out with this family who really has no idea that I'm a Marquette fan because I'm down here in Dallas, Texas. So I'm trying to like engage in conversation and be friendly, even because I didn't want to like turn off all my devices and just go what you and I call cone of silence.
Right.
Trying to keep up with the game. And if you know what television show Cone of Silence from, congratulations on being old like me and Phil.
Yeah.
But so I'm – and, like, so the game goes to overtime. So I'm like, crap, this is going to come down to the wire because the show I'm producing starts at 6:30. And so this, like – the game goes to overtime, and it's, like, 6 o'clock. I'm like, oh, my gosh. Like, I have to do these final preps for the show, make sure the show's timed out, make sure we get this last bit of video in for the show. And I'm also still trying to entertain these guests who are – you know, they're not, like, bored or anything, but, you know, they're just talking to me. Say, hey, where are you from? What do you do? And, hey, do you know this guy? Do you know that guy? I'm like, oh, yeah, I know him, know that.
You're basically doing the routine that everyone does with their mother when they've been on the phone with them for 20 minutes and you're hearing the third telling of the Aunt Ida story. Uh-huh. Yeah. Sure. Okay. Yeah. Uh-huh.
Well, all right then. You know, so like the game was like wrapping up, I want to say at like 6:25. And so by then Marquette was shooting free throws trying to wrap it up. So I had to go into the booth to time out the show at this point. And I saw Marquette was shooting free throws. I'm like, all right, I guess it's over. And then, so the show starts and I can see the game's wrapping up. I'm like, all right, sweet. I can tweet out this crying Jordan picture that I love to tweet out every time that Wisconsin loses. So I got that done. So that was my stressful Saturday trying to pay attention to the game while also trying to be responsible and work on this show. But yeah, that was it was tough to pay attention. Thankfully, I recorded the game, so I watched it late that night after I got home, so I watched the second half in peace. But thankfully, I was able to just relax knowing Marquette had already won, because I knew I wasn't going to be able to go to the rest of the day without knowing what happened in the game. Plus, I was just dying to know because I had watched the first half already. So
yeah, well,
stressful Saturday.
Yeah, no, I think you made the right decision. I don't think there's any way you could have stayed in the cone of silence and or not like how.
Yeah,
because
the thing is, I had to have my when I try to do that. Like normally, I'll like put my phone in just like airplane mode so I get like no texts,
right?
Or, you know, or alerts from Twitter or ESPN or whatever, and. But, you know, I have to have my phone on me for the show because I had to update the last-minute scores coming in because there were some games in progress. And plus, I had been texting with a few people during the day about the game, so I knew I was going to get texts from somebody. And plus, there were televisions everywhere.
Right.
So I knew I was going to see, like, the game. It's not like I could ask them, hey, could you turn off every television that has Fox on it? And that's just asking too much. So
could you also turn off all the stations that have the bottom line scrolling? That would be great.
Yeah, thanks. Exactly. So, yeah, any station that has a bottom line, turn that off. So there was no way I was going to be able to avoid the final. So I'm like, look, I just got to keep up with it best I can. So,
yeah, fun, man, sacrifices Saturday, must be made.
Yes, exactly. So I was able to watch the end of the game, produce the show. Everything went fine. Went out, had dinner, saw Creed 2, and then came back and watched the game at the end of the day.
Well, you had yourself a nice little Saturday.
I've had worse Saturdays. Not going to lie. I've had worse. Creed 2 is not bad. Not bad.
Okay.
Not bad at all.
Yeah, but you know what's even better? Beating Wisconsin.
It is. It is. And I thought you were going to say Avengers Endgame, which also came out over the week. So it was really just a solid weekend overall.
Oh, the trailer. Yeah, yeah. Endgame was what we were looking for. Endgame.
Yes, Endgame. We're a Marvel podcast too.
Yeah, we're gonna get there. That's that after the season. I think we're gonna have to go full Marvel in the
yeah,
off season.
Maybe we will do that. But getting back to Marquette basketball, let's maybe just evaluate where this team is right now. Maybe we're not quite at the halfway. Maybe could call this the third of the way through the season. Maybe about quarter pole if you include how many. Who knows how many postseason games Marquette's going to have. So basically Marquette has played enough quality opponents and played 10 games right now that we probably have a good sense of what this team is, what it's capable of, what its strengths are, what its deficiencies are. And I think the obvious part is I don't think any of us predicted Marquette to be this good defensively and maybe this, I don't want to say bad, but maybe lackluster offensively, maybe is the word I'm looking for, because, you know, they're still a, according to KenPom, a top 32 offense, but I still think there are some numbers lingering from last season that are boosting that up, because you look at the individual stats on KenPom as far as effective field goal percentage, turnovers, offensive rebounding, three-point percentage, two-point percentage, they're all pretty high, like 140-something or higher.
Yeah, no, it's definitely still
so none of their offensive statistics are all that great. Their best offensive stat is free throw percentage, which is ranked 55th in the country. So, but their defensive stats, mostly pretty good. 35th in effective field goal percentage, 28th in offensive rebounding percentage on defense, 3-point percentage, top 100, 2-point percentage on defense, top 100, free throw percentage on defense, top 60. So there are a lot of encouraging stats. What is your takeaway through 10 games on this team, Phil?
Well, it was interesting there. There was an article in The Athletic after the game yesterday, and Wojo was quoted as saying that he basically acknowledged the offense has work to do, but I don't remember the quote exactly, but essentially said that he was excited because the offense had room to grow and he felt that they would grow. So I'm surprised by how they've done it, but I would say, you know, given our prediction poll, I'm one off of where we predicted. I predicted a win against Indiana versus you had a loss. So I had them at 9-1 at this point. You have had them at 8-2. So we're kind of right where we thought they were. But I think the big takeaway is simply that they are a tougher, more defensive oriented team than I ever thought possible. I mean, the effective field goal percentage being 35, and we've played five out of our nine games have been against KenPom top 50 offenses. I mean, that's That's not an aberration. That's not a statistical anomaly. That is a solid defense, which I just, you know, I guess we can close the book on whether it was coaching or personnel for the defensive issues we saw the last couple of years.
Yeah, so are you saying it was personnel then?
Yeah, I'm saying it was personnel. I
think
largely.
I think that, you know, when you lose Rousey and you replace him with Chartouni, and then, you know, Matt Helt's minutes decrease, and then you get more out of Theo John and Ed Morrow. I mean, there's certainly a difference there.
And Brendan Bailey.
And Bailey has his contributions, I suppose. But, you know, in reference to what you said about Wojo, I don't know about you, but I think I do have more faith in Wojo being able to get more creative and get the offense going than I would if the defense was still bad and hoping that that would get fixed, right? I think I have some faith in that Wojo will be able to get more creative with the offense and maybe find ways to get that going a little more, especially maybe when he gets Greg Elliott back. Not that Greg Elliott himself is going to be an explosive offensive player, but maybe just give Wojo more options in the rotation at the guard spot. And we'll see what he does there. But I think, if the defense was still bad, I'm not sure I would have a whole lot of faith that it's going to get fixed this season, as opposed to the way it is now with the offense, probably most of the stats in the 100s. I have some faith that maybe that can get going, and I think Wojo and the staff are going to find ways to maybe bump that number up and hopefully keep the defense about where it is.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I mean, on the offensive end, I mean, I think Ed Morrow is, I mean, certainly played his best game as a Marquette player against Wisconsin, and both offensive and defense. I still am trying to figure out the physics of how he managed to get that second offensive rebound back up with four Wisconsin defenders standing all around him. But
yeah, I was watching that game. I was watching that game in the green room, and the sound was off. And like, I thought they called a whistle, like, or blew the whistle like twice during that. I'm like, my gosh, they're still playing. They're still playing.
Yeah, so it was a hell. I mean, one could argue we maybe would have wanted to kick out to a wide open Sam Hauser or Joey Hauser, right, or Marcus Howard, but let's not quibble over finer points. But you know, so I think Ed Morrow is coming along. Chartouni, I was actually encouraged. He didn't have any points, but he had a couple of drives that, like, looked legitimate. He just didn't finish them, and I think that'll come with time. So this is all a long way to me saying I think that there's the pieces still there for Wojo to get a more consistent offense, and again, I think one that where this offense grows is one that is less dependent on Marcus being the linchpin of everything. I mean, it's great if he's on and he's going, but I think if you can diversify the offense a little bit, I think that takes some pressure off of Marcus, and it certainly spreads the load around. So I think that's where they're going to get some improvement with the offense is simply around who's carrying the load and how much of that load those folks have to carry.
Yeah, you referenced our preseason predictions, and I think most of us probably had Marquette around 8-2, 9-1 around this point. I think the only difference is they didn't get there exactly the way we thought they would. Maybe we thought the offense would still be just outscoring the defense at this point. But yeah, they, as far as preseason predictions and that win-loss total, that looked pretty nice that a lot of us had. I expected that they would be 8-2 at this point, and right now I'm kind of optimistic that they're going to get through the non-con at that 11-2 mark that I had projected in the preseason. And if they can get to that, then hopefully they can have a solid Big East season and end up in the 21-plus win range. And hopefully that ends up in a really nice seed in the NCAA tournament.
Well, and
I don't want to blow past Buffalo necessarily, because I think that'll be a tough game, and maybe that'll be a game we kind of dive into a little bit deeper on the next podcast. But I think looking at it right now, you have to be confident that, granted, Buffalo will be a tough opponent, but Marquette should be able to finish the non-conference here with three more wins and get to 11-2, and then, you know, set itself up to be one of the favorites in the Big East when that gets going.
Yeah, well, I mean, again, this is, and maybe this is optimistic Phil showing up again, but I mean, again, it's not a fluke that Marquette is A, winning a lot of games, and B, you know, is doing so with defense. I mean, they've played, according to KenPom rankings, They've played the number 2, number 13, number 24, number 25, and number 40th teams in the country, right? And they won three out of five of those. The only game where Marquette looked real bad was the Indiana game on the road.
Right.
I mean, you know, if you want to look at it as a glass half full, the Kansas game, Marquette looked like for at least, you know, at least 19 and a half minutes, looked like they could definitely hang with the Kansas team. So, you know, and that was good offense against Kansas as well. So, there's a lot of potential for this team to, I do think they go 11-2. But it, you know, there's a lot of potential for this team. I think there's room to grow yet. And if they're starting with defense, I think they can only get better.
Yeah. You know, Kansas is probably going to be ranked number one next week because, Gonzaga lost to Tennessee over the weekend. So I don't know if Marquette's going to be ranked. I've seen kind of a split decision. Some of the early polls, like Gary Parrish said no, Seth Davis said yes. We'll see what the AP voters say on Monday. I would think Marquette's going to be ranked, but I don't really care all that much. What I care about is that Marquette has put itself in a good position to have a solid non-conference resume. We talked about the schedule when the season began, that it was a challenging schedule, and that we just hope Marquette could get through it with two or fewer losses. And if they did that, then I think the team would be in great shape to get through the Big East, which there's not going to be as many opportunities for great wins in the Big East this season, but it's not like the Big East is a total grease fire either. There's still going to be some quality wins in there, just maybe not the high-level top 10, 15 type of wins that maybe we've been used to over the past few seasons, with Villanova being a national championship contender and Xavier was a national championship contender under Chris Mack. But I still think there are a handful of top 25-ish quality teams in the Big East. So Marquette's going to have a chance to get a few more nice wins. And hopefully, basically, if Marquette can hold serve at home in the Big East and do maybe is 500-ish on the road, you know, if you do that, then you're talking 12. Oh, wait, yeah. That would be much, not 12, but that would be higher. But
yeah.
You get what I'm saying. Get
yeah,
more
yeah.
than that. Yeah, that would be like, yeah, more than that.
That would be like 15. East, but, yeah.
Right. I don't want to say they're going to get that many wins on the road, but hopefully you can just hold serve at home and get enough wins on the road that you're going to have a solid resume and maybe get a decent seed so you're not in an 8-9 game or in a bubble situation.
Yeah, no, I think the team has put themselves in good position. Now they have 10 days off, and we're obviously going to pod between now and then the next set of games, but they have 10 days off. They have finals. Get healthy, get some rest, maybe install some more offense, you know, and they get a warm-up game against North Dakota, which, you know, I mean, the UTEP game was a struggle and worrisome, but that was a classic trap game. Hopefully they get some rest and are ready to go and can kind of close out I would say, a successful so far non-conference season and close it out by winning their last three. That would be great.
Yeah, I was just trying to do too much math in my head. But yeah, if Marquette holds serve at home and then maybe does 5-4 on the road, so that's 14-4 in the Big East. That would be amazing. But, you know, see, in the past, 10 wins in the Big East is great. This year, maybe not so great. Yeah, I think maybe Marquette can set its sights a little higher, but maybe we can worry about that when we get to Big East play. But yeah, I think as you alluded to, Phil, I think the primary concern now, guys with nagging injuries, maybe give them a break. We've looked at maybe talked about Matt Helt, maybe slowed a little bit by that toe. They've looked at Greg Elliott, no timetable for his return. Hopefully you can get him back in time for Big East play. That'd be great, but no real update on him.
Yeah, I'd be shocked if Greg Elliott plays before the Southern game, I guess, at this point.
Yeah, I think I would too. And I think maybe at this point you're just hoping to have him for Big East play. So if you can get that, I think that's what you want.
Yep, agreed.
I don't think a redshirt's going to be on the table for Greg as long as he can play. So as long as he feels like he can still dribble and be effective. So I like where the team is. Obviously we're always going to be riding high after beating Wisconsin. But the fact that Marquette has gotten through the schedule so far with just the two losses, as long as you can make sure you don't have a hiccup in any of these next three. Granted, Buffalo will be a challenge. Marquette should be in great shape as we get into January. And hopefully this should be a team that should not only be in the tournament, but be comfortably in and maybe make some noise. We'll see how it goes.
Yeah, that would be – I'm looking forward to it. Again, I think fully optimistic Phil is back. I've seen enough that I'm taking the guardrails off, and I'm
see, that's dangerous when you do that, though. That makes me real nervous when you get too optimistic because, you know, then, you know, after Marquette – if Marquette beats Buffalo, we're going to be talking Final Four, and I'm just not comfortable with that.
So. So you're saying we're going full Admiral Akbar and it's a trap?
Yeah, let's not do that. You know, what I will say, though, is that the fact that Marquette is kind of right on track with my projections, I'm just going to promise myself right now that I'm not going to freak out if Marquette loses to St. John's on New Year's Day. That's part of my projections, because I did have them losing the first Big East game. So, not going to freak out. Just remain calm. Stay the course. Marquette,
you know, but that doesn't feel like the true Marquette experience. I mean, you've got to freak out over the the losses and over enthusiastic about the wins.
Yeah, I guess you have to. So I look forward to freaking out here in another couple weeks, hopefully not any time before New Year's Day, because, again, hopefully Marquette wins its next three games and has a great finals week as well. And if you're a student, good luck to you in finals week also. So, yeah, like Phil said, we're going to – no Marquette game this week, but maybe we'll be back next weekend and maybe look ahead to Marquette's – last three non-conference games as we head to the holidays, and then we'll be talking about Big East play after that. As always, we appreciate you guys listening here on Scrambled Eggs. Hit us up on Twitter. I'm Joe McCann 3. Phil is MOOOF23. Crack Sidewalks is the team handle. You can go to cracksidewalks.com. That's where we post the podcast. You can leave your comments there. We also have the Scrambled Eggs Facebook page, and don't forget to subscribe, rate, review on Apple Podcasts. Phil, any final thoughts before we get out of here?
It is 9:42 p.m. on a Sunday night, and Brad Davidson is still a dinkus.
I thought you were going to do the Texas-Oklahoma thing because, you know, Texas fans, they're always like, it's 9:42 p.m. and Oklahoma still sucks.
I thought about it, but I really wanted to
go after Davidson. I thought
you were
going to say, like, Wisconsin still sucks, but, you know, Wisconsin does suck.
They suck hard.
They do. Until next time, seashells and balloons, everybody. Wisconsin sucks.